Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
There was a moment in the closing minutes of injury time at Croke Park on Saturday night after Dean Rock had kicked what turned out to be the final score of the game when the cameras picked out a Dublin supporter in the crowd. This mustachioed gentleman was dressed in a half-navy, half-blue suit jacket with the Dublin crest on the chest.
I remember.
You know what I'm talking about. Beautifully pressed white shirt, navy pocket square, navy top hat, navy and blue striped dicky bow, clutching the pièce de résistance, Murph. That's French. For something. Clutching a massive necklace.
A piece of the resistance, I believe.
Yeah, I presume.
The transition.
So he had a massive necklace with five miniature trophies hanging off it, like, you know, links on a piece of jewellery, signifying the now almost completed drive for five. At that point, he knew it was in the bag. I saw that man, his eyes closed, his face looking skywards in a state of pure joy, and I thought, what's not to love about the Doves? There he is, Ken. There's a fella right there. Yeah. Well, I've already described it, so hopefully Ken's chortle there will work.
Were the fans segregated?
No, but they give out blocks of tickets to
just as well
to clubs and that.
They were or they weren't.
No,
well, not segregated, but they like they end up sitting in.
He
blocks.
Must have checked behind him for Kerry supporters because that thing would be a useful, if somewhat clunky, garrote. Which would be difficult to resist.
Welcome to Monday's Second Captain's Podcast. Hi, guys.
Hey there, Owen. How are you?
Owen, how are you?
I'm good.
You know, it's not just Dublin that have ridiculously dressed people wandering around begging TV cameras to show them on
Kerry do?
I mean, I don't know that Kerry do. Cork, obviously, have a guy who for 20 years has made it his business to stand around and wait for lazy TV producers to go, oh, he looks like a character, so let's put him on. Mayo have a guy who dressed like St. Patrick. So all you Dub haters, I mean, I know it's easy to hate that guy, but you don't have to hate the football team that he supports.
I got back from my holidays just in time. Couldn't have been time better. Left after
it's
the first
All Ireland. It's almost as if they waited for you. Well, no, you were there for the first game.
I was there for the first game and flew the following morning and then arrived back Friday for the replay and managed to get to Croke Park to see history being made. Five in a row, indeed. And I think Kieran Kilkenny summed it up best when he morphed into Ric Flair in his post-match interview in RTÉ.
That's the most special feeling I've ever felt in my whole life. I'm so emotional. Woo! We did it! Such relief after the first game. Such a titanic battle with such respect for this Kerry team, and to just get over the line means so much to this group. Grown men out there in tears, we're so proud of each other, our families, this county. What can I say? I'm absolutely delighted.
Five in a row, it's been done. You're the ones to do it. How can you take it all in?
I suppose we can just go and party. Woo!
That's a good post-match interview. Absolute nonsense. Well, one kind of sentiment in the middle of it.
Yeah, great nonsense.
Mostly great nonsense. Really, I took Kieran Kilkenny's advice. I went and partied outside Mulligan's in Poolbeg Street.
And I'm having a hard time holding these alligators down.
Just until the last bus home. I mean, all good parties end with the last
bus. Last bus home.
And you always know it's a big occasion when the politicians are out mingling with us common folk.
Oh, God.
At one point, I struggled to weave my way. You've been out there, outside there on busy nights. It's hard enough to get into the bar.
You know, in the last 5 years or so, I have steered clear of that. Just a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. A variety of reasons. But
who'd you meet on?
So I was trying to, you know, you're trying to weave your way back into the bar. Oh, excuse me. Oh, yeah. Eventually, you're kind of having to just put your hand on people's shoulders, just kind of shove your way through and all that kind of stuff. This is all outside, you know. And then at one stage, I don't know what made me stop. I just thought, I get the sense that this person in front of me has more, coming the opposite way, has more political heft than me, you know. Uh-huh. More power potentially in the country. Mm-hmm. I just got that sense, and luckily I did stand back and let him pass because it was none other than Micheál
Don't
Martin.
Treat me like a fool.
No, it wasn't back any. It was Micheál Martin.
What's that from?
Don't treat me like a fool.
Who's he talking to there?
Ah, God knows. You know that he's thinking it most of the time when he's talking to someone, but
you don't seem too impressed by my name drop.
No, I mean, I thought Shane Ross would be the sort of.
No, I'm sick of Shane Ross.
Of course, I'm sick of Shane Ross. But I mean,
is Micheál Martin a Dubs fan?
I don't think so.
It's Cork.
It's Cork, isn't
his,
it?
Well, I mean, his son plays for Nemo Rangers in Cork. So
Greater Dublin.
I actually touched the hem of his garment. Well, my beard brushed off the shoulder pad of his suit jacket as he went past. So that's pretty pretty impressive. I'll move on from that really boring anecdote. Of course, Ken, you called it last week while I was away.
Success after success after success after success after success after success after success.
After all that success, you explained that the drawn game provided a reminder to the Dublin players that you don't just get handed the trophy at the end of the game regardless.
Yeah.
You have to go and win it. And boy, did they go and win it in the sunshine at Croke Park on Saturday night. Huh?
They did. And it was a sea of blue from Drogheda in the north all the way down to Corktown in the south. all the way out west to Edenderry, Clonard.
Yeah. Bonfires everywhere.
Athboy. All the Dubs were celebrating, and I think most of the country that now falls within the Greater Dublin area were pretty delighted by it.
That's the sense you get with your finger on the pulse.
The greatest good for the greatest number. That's what it means when Dublin keep winning this championship.
And when does that logic run out? Six in a row? Seven?
It continues to grow and to thrive as well.
No, please continue.
Murph did come in today saying, "No, I'm really pleased with it. I thought it was great, and you know, fair play. And not as many people hate them as you like to think, McDevitt." But then with Kent talking,
I mean,
that can get you right.
Like he's a one man recruitment machine for We Hate the Dub.
But it was the best thing about it to know how happy everybody else in the country was. Dublin.
Let's not go crazy, Ken. You know? Because there is a broad canvas of opinion. I mean, if you're on Twitter, you only saw one opinion, which is that everyone hates the Dubs and...
A scumbag.
Yeah. But that's not actually the case, which we will get into in due course.
Oisín
but I
Mike.
Don't think that's the case.
Oisín and Mike coming right up. And after we finish that discussion of Dublin's dominance of Gaelic football, it'll be some more discussion of Dublin's dominance of Gaelic football for because the Dublin ladies team made it 3 in a row in front of a record crowd in fairly rotten conditions at Croke Park. And we're chatting to Noel Healy, the former Footballer of the Year, who battled back from injury to come off the bench and kick the final score of the game. So loads of great stuff coming up. Well, if you like the Dubs, I guess. Some live event news for you, first of all.
A whole new way of doing journalism. It's brilliant.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Thank you, Vincent. Thank you, Eamon. Thank you, Wolfie. Right. At the moment, all you're going to get is broad brushstrokes. All will be revealed over the course of the week on the Second Captain's World Service. But for now, what I can tell you is we'll be announcing two events that are exclusive to our members. One is a live screening of Ireland versus Japan on the 28th of September, followed by a live recording of the Second Captain's Podcast. So early morning Rugby World Cup action plus Second Captain's Podcast equals a recipe for fun.
Hope you're enjoying the tournament.
Exactly. Rob will hopefully be racking up the tries. Is Rob injured? I'm catching up with... Okay, we'll leave panic button until another day. Anyway, come and watch that one with us. The second event.
Yeah, about that on... Anyway, no. For now, let's just continue.
Keep seeing something in my mentions. Can you please bring back the panic button? Listen, I don't know. I'll sort it out by tomorrow. I'll have a chat. Second event. It's only the launch night for the biggest sports book of the year. Richie X5 Sads Sadler is releasing his memoir, Recovering, in a beautiful little venue called the Chocolate Factory in Dublin in early October. This book is going to blow everyone away. Trust us, we will be recording a live show at the official launch, and all tickets go to Second Captain's World Service members. It'll be a special night, and at Richie's request, it will be full with our much-loved members. So these two announcements will be made this week on the World Service. You'll get all the details then. If you want to be at either event, you'll need to hear those details straight away, because I'd imagine they'll be much sought-after tickets. Hopefully, you still have to become a member. SecondCaptains.com. That's the place to do it. And you should do so before tomorrow. Now, for the final time this championship season, let us welcome Oisín McConville. Hi, Oisín.
Owen, really good to have you back.
Oh, well.
That was pointed.
Yeah, particularly with the stare over to Murph. I like it. Yeah. And Mike Quirk, how are you, Mike?
Good, Owen. Really good.
Good. You don't sound it, but listen, we'll get to that. Okay, there's been a bit of reluctance to compare eras and generations and teams of the present to teams of the past, but we have no such issues with doing it right here. So I'm going to put it to you, Oisín, that this Dublin football team is clearly the greatest of all time.
They are the greatest of all time, and they put that discussion to bed in no uncertain terms on Saturday evening. And when you consider, the one thing I would consider on top of their achievement is that the pressure they were under. And do you know what? We've seen a little bit of that pressure. We've seen more of the human side of Dublin footballers over the last 48 hours than we had seen in the previous 4 years, I think. And you can clearly see just how much it meant to them. The outpouring of emotion. And not only that, but the way they played during the game, the way they carried themselves after the game. And
what do you mean the way they carried themselves after the game?
I just think that they do everything in the proper manner. It's not, you know, the game was played in a sort of spirit that was like, whenever they go at it on the field, they go at it. But whenever the game's done, it's done. And I just think they realise what their responsibilities are. You know, their responsibilities as far as sports people, role models.
Are you talking about going around, you know, because there's clips of Cluxton and Cooper going around shaking hands with the Kerry players, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, the lads who obviously went to college together, you know, the Dublin players made a point of going to, McCaffrey made a point of going to the lads that he was at college with, and same with Cooper, and the same with Cluxton and that. And just, I know it's easy to do it. I know it's easy to do it when you're winning. Like, it's easy to but it's also easy to forget those sort of things. And just smack a class. You know, the whole thing smacks a class. And yet, one of the substitutions smacked a little bit of desperation, I thought. And
I think another one you're talking about.
Yeah, and so I think that's sort of, that's the only thing that, for when I look on the Dublin's five, that's probably the only thing I can't really understand from what come out of Saturday evening. But getting back to it, they're class, you know, in everything they do, and the performance was a really professional, clinical performance, and how they played up front was a joy to watch.
Yeah, Mike, Dublin are a force for good in the game, and I don't think that's quite as unpopular an opinion as a lot of Dubs fans, I think, would think. You know, I think that if you lived only on Twitter, you would think that this Dublin team are historically unpopular and no one likes them. But I think there's so much love out there for Conn, for Paul Mannion, for Brian Fenton, for McCaffrey, for Cluxton. You know, like, there is a huge amount of goodwill out there for this team and for the individuals that, you know, are the leading lights on this team.
For sure, but, like, you know, I've told you before that Twitter is not actually real life, and sometimes people don't understand that. But, like, I think, you know, while we're bitterly disappointed, obviously, in Kerry, there's never been anything other than complete respect for the kind of talent that Dublin have always produced in the last 10 years. And what we saw on Saturday night was, again, just like a further addition to that legacy of where, you know, the first game was about such resilience and amazing character. When everything was on the table for Kerry to go and take that first game, they somehow found a way to just get over the line and get themselves a second chance. And you just felt like that there were so many guys who had underperformed for them in the first day, the likes of Kilkenny and all the rest of them that you mentioned. You just knew they were going to come back and it was going to take another amazing performance from Kerry to get over the line. And ultimately, Kerry weren't good enough. And 15 points and only 5 in the second half was never going to be good enough with the talent that Dublin had at their disposal. But like to Oisin's point there, I think the big thing that we saw after the game on Saturday night was just that more human side of some of them. You know, it was like Jim Gavin was actually smiling. You know, it was like we haven't seen this in 5 years. He actually looked happy to win in All-Ireland and walked over the hill and the hill was clapping. And I actually had my 3 kids at the game and they were like, can we go, Dad, can we go? And I was like, no, hang on, because we're seeing something here that we've never seen before, lads. And I wasn't even talking about the 5 in a row. But I just think for them, like for their own legacy moving forward, I think the more of that stuff, or even just a little bit more of it that we get to see, it just brings them into your kind of heart a little bit more to know that they're just like the rest of us, really, lads. They love this stuff and they enjoy it and they can take massive value out of it. And I think that helps their cause a little bit.
Absolutely. And what makes them unpopular, Oisin, amongst the subset of people who don't like them, are things that aren't really any of the players' business in a lot of ways. You know, like the money factor, you know, you're playing 2 games at home in Croke Park in the Super 8s, which is just wrong. And the players can see that, I'm sure. But again, it's not up to them to come out and say, oh, you know, the GA are, you know, making a decision that favours. I mean, it's not their business, you know. Cluxton's abilities as an orator, Jim Gavin's stiff upper lip.
I thought Cluxton nailed it the other day. Yeah. But the greatest acceptance speech by a distance.
Do you know what I mean? Like, all of that stuff is kind of, like, it's nothing to do with football. You know what I mean? Like, and Mike is absolutely right. What people want to see is the humanity of it. You know what I mean? And, like, you know, there's, like, Gavin's celebrations at the end. Like, I was like, just that, like, that's all we wanted. We just wanted to see a smile in the last 4 years. Like, we don't ask for much. Like, Cluxton go, like, reaching into his glove bag to put the glove. Like, that's human. You know what I mean? That is human. Like, Cluxton is obviously, it's, you know, like, daft. You know, like, if that's what your reaction is. But, like, he's smiling and laughing and he looks genuinely delighted when he's celebrating with his teammates.
Yeah, but yeah, have you seen the reaction to that? The reaction is, and to be honest, I was thinking it myself when I saw Cluxton walking around taking the acclaim. I thought, well, he's gone and Gavin is gone. Yeah. And I'm not the only person who thought that.
Maybe an extreme reaction, but
it could be that these guys are retiring.
The only fault line in the whole thing is a Gavin retirement or a Cluxton retirement. Mm-hmm. And both of them are imminently possible. You know, like, we don't know, but I mean, there's a widespread straw clutching over the last 48 hours. Jim Gavin's press conference was different to the last few. He had his dad with him in the back of the press room in Croke Park. Those smiles, the celebrations is different. Cluxton is 37 now. 38. Like, these are, there are straws in the wind.
They are. Cluxton's had his, probably, I think, his best season in 6 or 7. So,
for pure goalkeeping, you know, as in the stuff that the basics of what a goalkeeper was 20 years ago,
shot stopping. How good he's been under the hay ball, how
38 tomorrow.
Cluxton, yeah. Communication with his defence and his shot stopping. That's forgetting about his kickouts just for now.
Did you hear this stuff that he, after the drawn final, supposedly was so livid with himself for not saving Kerry's goal, which nobody saw as a goalkeeping mistake, but he was so livid that he spent hours bugging Jim Gavin to show him video of it and getting the other goalkeepers. He must have a whale of a time being Stephen Cooking's understudy. A couple of hours, you know.
Same shot.
Yeah, but then you did see him embrace them after the game, and it was a really genuine thing that they're playing their own small part. But nobody thought he had made a mistake in the drawn final, except he did, and he made the save when it counted in the second half.
Lads, I talked to you a couple of years ago about the standards they were setting, and Philly McMahon sauntering up the field in the league final and Clucks and kicking a score or a wide, I can't even remember, and Cluxton going absolutely bananas at him when he come back down the field. Jim Gavin took McMahon off 5 minutes later. Connolly went up the field, had a bit of a shot off his left foot from Noah. They're winning the game by 10 or 11 points, and Connolly was off then, and that's when I knew that there's something slightly different about this crowd of boys. It's not, yes, it's part of it is player led, but also the standards we're setting for each other and what's acceptable within that group and what's not acceptable. And again, you know, that example just highlights that. But if Clarkson was to go, that's big. If Jim Gavin was to go, that's massive, because of the culture that he, like I love saying this because it angers people. Usually when I say it, if it's on radio, Johnny McGee usually texts in or tweets or whatever about, because when we played against Dublin, there was a softness about them. And when we went to not physically, but when we went to Croke Park, or Mike will tell you, when you went to Croke Park to play Dublin at home, and usually when you got on top of them, they crumbled. This crowd of boys are different, and that has all been changed. The whole of linking arms and going to the hill and all of those things have gone completely out the window. Okay, Pat Gilroy might have started, but Jim Gavin has put an absolute end to any sort of ego or anything else, and that's a brilliant place to have. That's a brilliant changing room to have. I mean, you know, Mike's going into Laois next year, and I'm sure that's probably one of the first things that he'd love to have. And I've been in a lot of change rooms. I've been one of the egos in the change rooms, and you know what? It doesn't help. It does not help. You know, the smooth running of a Gaelic football team or any sort of sports team, I presume, but a team that is operating at that level and not to have any sort of egos, for those guys just to feel happy to just sit on the pitch on Saturday evening and just try and drink it in as much as they could. Yes, that happens when you get used to winning, but there's a real maturity about how to go about everything. I'm fucking sick. I'm sick giving you the positives about them, because like I still, like everybody else, would love to see them beaten and see what the reaction is after that. But if Jim Gavin goes, that's serious upheaval for this team, because, believe me, egos can creep back in very, very quickly.
Yeah, indulge us for a minute then, Mike, because this conversation is obviously about, you know, Dublin's five in a row, but it's also about, you know, how the rest of the country react to the five in a row. And I mean, if Jim Gavin does go, what does the next Dublin manager do? Like, he walks into the dressing room on the first night and says, I'm changing nothing. You know, let's this has worked. Let's try and make this as seamless as possible. Which, you know, in one way is an option, but in another way, the players are looking at you going like, well, you know,
what are you bringing?
What are you bringing? We've won 6-7 All Irelands here. Like, you're going to have to do a little better than, no, we're just going to do exactly what the last guy did. And so that's one option. The other option is for a guy to come in and say, you know, throw all your All Ireland medals in the bin. Yeah, you've won them by cheating, Brian Clough style. And, you know, tell him that this is the new sheriff in town. Like, it's tough to be an inter-county manager, and we'll get onto that in a minute, Mike. But can you imagine taking over the Dublin job? Like, how tough that is. Like, that's.
But like, I mean, it's an absolutely unbelievable opportunity, and it's a curse of an opportunity all rolled into one. You know, and funnily enough, like as brilliant as I'm assuming Jim Gavin is, because we really don't know. But I mean, in terms of what he's done from the outside, it looks like it's an incredible job that he's done. I happen to think that Cluxton is the bigger guy. Like, I think Cluxton, you know, Oisín made the point that Cluxton would be a big loss and Gavin would be huge. I actually would flip it around and go the opposite way. I think a new manager comes in there, unless he's stupid, he's going to keep most of the same stuff going on with his own couple of little tweaks and different things, and bring in a couple of new guys and have different voices. I think it's easier to maintain that when you have a kind of a player leadership structure with Stephen Cluxton at the very head of it, who looking at these fellas on Saturday night, lads, I would imagine if Cluxton said, lads, we're all going to pick up arms and go fight in some war, I actually think they would think about it and go with him. You know, it's, they have such respect for him because of the standards that he holds himself in. And that story about how he spent a couple of hours with the video analyst looking at his footwork and how disappointed with his own footwork he was, and how he went and trained so many days a week to work specifically on his footwork so that if that situation arose again, that he'd be better able to cope with it. That's the kind of stuff that impacts dressing rooms. When you see your leader and your most legendary player that has ever played for the county at this stage holding himself to such unbelievably high standards, that if you're Evan Comerford, what are you going to do? Show up, you know, 20 minutes before training and kick out a few balls and have a bit of a stretch? You have to be there an hour before a session, and you now have to replicate the stuff that your best players are doing. And I think when you lose those guys from the dressing room, particularly Cluxton, who is a generational guy, that's when those standards can drop a little bit, because the voice of the guy, of the manager, is not as impactful as what the likes of Clarkson and these guys doing. But, you know, I still think whoever was offered that job, if it was something that he'd come, you know, and if Brian, if he goes, Gavin, I don't think he will, Jim, yeah. Gavin, I think he's staying in there for the long haul. He was talking in his press conference about 2020 already. So unfortunately for the rest of the place, I think Clarkson and himself would be mad to go anywhere the way they're going.
Yeah, well, Clarkson would only go if it's more of a life, you know, if he's doing things in his life outside football where he can't give the required commitment. In terms of going out at the top and all that, he looks like he's still got a couple of years before he even starts to wane. It's not like you're seeing signs and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But I do want to talk about Kerry, about both teams together. Hope it's not too patronising, Mike, to say that Kerry more than played their part over both fixtures. I know that they ran out of whatever it was at the end in the second half, but like, that first half was amazing. And to have five players over the two teams in that replay scoring 4 points from play is extraordinary. I think you were looking at these stats earlier, Murph. This is such a rarity.
4 points for play as opposed to 1-1. But Dean Rock in 2017, Kieran Kilkenny last year, were the only other players this decade to kick 4 points from play in an Ireland final. And five players did it on Saturday evening. Like, that's the quality of the football. Like, the quality was... like, it was insane. It was like everything that you love about Gaelic football was there in 35 minutes. And, you know, if Kerry couldn't keep that pace up, I mean, like, who could? You know, I mean, it's like, you know, we'll get into the ifs and buts of various incidents in the game. But that alone, Oisin, like, that is just ridiculous.
I was just thinking about coming up the road, you know, how much, what a favour that the blanket defences have eventually done us, because I think that forwards have improved dramatically because of them. They've operated in small pockets of space and they've been comfortable doing that. And then they find themselves in a lot more space on Saturday evening, and they're able to convert and execute in a way that probably you haven't seen before. And, you know, there was a couple of blips during that time. Like, I mean, Paul Geaney had a very, very simple chance to make it. I think that would have made him 5 points from play. He had a very, very simple opportunity to do that. He was trying to orchestrate a goal. I know what he was trying to do. But some of the quality, I mean, Kilkenny was out of this world on Saturday night. And do you know what? He changed his game from the first game. That wasn't really involved. You know, he has to be seen. I've said this a number of times. He has to be seen as more than somebody who can just retain the ball because he's too good a footballer. Mm. Somebody who gets a load of possessions in. I seen him playing club football. He played a lot of club football at full forward, and he looks very comfortable there. He's a score getter. He's the go-to man. The whole retention of the ball sort of does get on my wick a wee bit, but he turned that around the other night and he was exceptional. And then when he had to retain the ball towards the end, he did a bit of that as well. Yeah, so there's a good mix there. But the quality of the forwards you seen the other night, Sean O'Shea for me has been phenomenal this year. And I know Clifford gets a lot of it, and Geaney will get a lot of it, and Con O'Callaghan will get a lot of praise, and Mannion and Kilkenny and Dean Rock from the first day, and I understand all that, and that's a must because they were unbelievable. But Sean O'Shea for me this year, for a young lad, has been phenomenal. Strength, reliability from frees, coolness, calmness
at vital stages as well. You know, like when his team needs him, he just pops up with points from play.
Like the last point he got, he was holding two lads off with his left hand and kicking. Dropping the ball onto his right foot with one hand and kicking it over the bar. This lad's 20. Mike, is he 21 yet?
Yeah, 21. Just 21, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, imagine what we have to see from him.
Is this any sort of any consolation whatsoever for Kerry supporters today, Mike?
No.
No.
I mean, the big thing from that Kerry guys are going to get all winter is you left it after you the first day. You know, that's going to be the stick that they're beaten with now, and that's what they're going to have to put up with until the National League starts again. And there is obviously a bit of truth to that. But, I mean, the only consolation we're on is you know that these guys, the Cliffords and the Sean O'Shea's and Stephen O'Brien to a slightly lesser extent, he's still only, you know, a relatively young guy. Like, you still have forward talent that, you know, on the face of it should be guys that are you know, the top footballers in the game in the next 10 years, over the next 10 years. Obviously, Conor Callan and Mannion, these guys are in the same bracket. But I'm just saying you can enjoy it, you know, from a Kerry perspective, that these guys are going to entertain us and they're going to make us very competitive over the next 10 years with the type of talent that we have available. And it just, you know, ultimately, it just wasn't enough. You know, you can pick holes in different things and say this happened and they should have done this or they could have brought on this guy earlier or whatever. But ultimately, like, we're saying that for years and years about Dublin. Like, Dublin are... they're just this, like a force of water coming down a mountain. And no matter what impediment you put in front of them, they eventually find their way around it and keep flowing down the mountain. And Kerry, for their, you know, they've played in three national finals this year, obviously beaten by Mayo in the National League, you know, beaten or drawn the first game and this one. And that's probably exactly what they needed, obviously. The result would have been nicer if they could have won the game. But in terms of, you know, really accelerating their own learning and their own experience and what they're going to get out of it, there's a lot of stuff that Peter Keane and his management team can take out of that and hopefully build towards the next couple of years.
Would one of those things be that they maybe need to foul a little bit more? I mean, I shouldn't be doing this. We've just had the most open All-Ireland final possibly ever, and I'm saying that it shouldn't have been as open. But it's funny, at the stadium, say the Merchant goal, it looked from where I was as though Merchant just sped away from David Moore and was, you know, he's so fast that he just can't be touched and he's in on goal and the defence parts to mark other players and he scores. But then looking back at it, actually it turns out Moore's pretty fast, you know, and he kept up with him just enough that he was within rugby tackle range. He was within Sean Kavanagh range, if you want to call it that, and he presumably chose not to take the man down. There's been a couple of these instances over the years in Kerry Dublin, All Ireland's, people would probably still say Kevin McMenamin should have been taken down all those years ago. It was just one example, though. Like, Kerry seemed to have a policy. I don't know if it was deliberate, of no fouls. Maybe they don't want to give Dean Rock easy shots, whatever it was.
Yeah, well, I mean, the contrast would have been the Tadhg Morley chance earlier when he was put through and he was bearing down on goals. And to be fair, the referee, who, look, you know, he made a couple of mistakes, but in general, he, you know, it was the same for both teams. He didn't make anything overly egregious. But, like, he actually gave, I know it was a mistake, he meant to tick Fitzsimons, but he threw up a black card, first of all. And to be fair, it was actually Conor Callan who made a brilliant foul, you know, to stop him before he got to the square, not give away a black card, not, you know, not leave the pitch. And more, and you could see as he was, you know, he reached and he grabbed him by the shoulder and he just, you know, the thing you'd love to see was just grab the jersey and give away a yellow card without pulling him down, without getting a black card. But it's easy when you're, you know, obviously sitting down here talking about it. It's a much different thing when you're live. But from a Kerry coaching kind of perspective, you would imagine they would be really, really disappointed with that goal in terms of, you know, what Tom O'Sullivan and Tadhg Morley did and were just taken away from the play and didn't really go and stop the ball and just stayed with their men. And, like, that's something, again, you know, talking about what will they take from it. You would imagine if a similar scenario happens next year, that Tadhg Morley and you know, Tom Sullivan would leave Conor Callan and would leave whoever they were marking, Paul Mannion, and go and give up a foul, give up a point, but don't give up a goal. And it's just, again, a little bit of inexperience. And amazing that a guy as young as Conor Callan had the wherewithal to go and commit that foul, a really cute, smart, kind of intelligent foul, and not really suffer any major consequences.
So cute, the referee didn't even know it was him. I mean, that's how cute it was.
Yeah, and the same with Martin. Like, Martin definitely took 127 steps before he scored a goal, and Conor Lane didn't see that either. But that's only an aside, lads. Don't be bitter.
But the actual throw-up was the perfect throw-up. Jack Barry had had Fenton, yeah, and yeah, who was in the middle of the field?
That's James McCarthy.
James McCarthy, yeah. He had the two of them tied up, and David Moore...
All he did was catch it, you know. It's a different game. Yeah. Because I really felt that, like, once the goal went in, then, obviously, you know, Kerry were going to need a goal of their own to get back into it, but... Dublin had control of the game then, you know, once the goal went in, and Kerry couldn't ever really apply scoreboard pressure, which is, you know, like if Dublin can hold you at arm's length for, you know, to 2 or 3 points, like Kerry got it back to 1 point for, I think, 30 seconds or something, but that was about the extent of it. Like, Kerry, the wides at vital times in the second half meant Dublin, it was always Dublin's game then, you know, and Kerry were just trying to get back into it.
Yeah, no, it was a massive game changer. That's an obvious thing to say. I think David Morn tried to weigh up the situation as best he could. Yeah, he was struggling to get him, but he had him at one stage, he had a hand on him, and that was the time to... But I think he was hedging on Owen Marchant going in there and maybe kicking it over the bar, but yeah, certainly not like sticking it in the bottom corner.
It's not Conor Callaghan you're chasing down or whatever, so maybe you think you might get away with it.
Yeah, you do.
Didn't quite happen. Where else would Kerry have been looking at this, Mike, and thinking, you know, they obviously played a sweeper and Dublin reacted to that decision. Is there any sense that they weren't quite as brave as they were in the first game?
Yeah, well, the kickouts were, you know, yeah. I suppose everybody was kind of excited to see, okay, can, you know, how will Cluxton now cope with the kickout press when Kerry get a chance to put it up there? And we just didn't really see it. I mean, it was a couple of times in the second half, they kind of half did it, but not anywhere near the same kind of, you know, extent or aggressiveness that they did it the first day out. And that was kind of strange. And they played Paul Murphy, obviously, as nearly a full-time sweeper back in front. But a team like Dublin, as experienced and as good as they are, like, they're not going to be kicking ball down the throat of Paul Murphy. They're going to take their time and pick holes in that and find scoring opportunities as they did. So you just would have loved to have seen Kerry just even set the agenda and say to everybody in the ground, look, we're going to be as bold and as aggressive as we can here, and every chance that we get, we're going to try and pin Dublin in with their kick out. That was something. Probably would have liked to have seen the substitutes like Tommy Welsh get a little bit more time, Killian Splann and these guys who had been so impactful in the first game. Like, I think Killian came on the 60th minute, Tommy probably maybe 3 or 4 minutes before him. And, you know, it's all those little bits and pieces. But ultimately, lads, like, Stephen O'Brien had a chance with about, I'm not sure what was on the clock, and, you know, with that goal chance, and Johnny Cooper played it really well, forced him into taking it as opposed to throwing it across the square. And then Cluxton comes up with a big play, as he did in the previous game, where he made a couple of massive saves as well. And that save, like, the difference between that ball hitting the back of the net and Cluxton batting it away is the difference between Kerry pushing on with a bit of momentum in the last 10 minutes when that would have leveled the game. And sometimes, you know, ultimately in the last 20 minutes, 15 minutes, 10 minutes, it's about taking your chances. And Kerry had a couple of chances and they didn't ultimately take them. And, you know, Dublin obviously showed why they are the team they are by taking theirs.
I've never seen anything like that. The kick-out ratio after 40 minutes was both teams had won 100% of their kick-outs. And the first kick-out that went astray was the Cluxton one that went across the lane at the opposition 65. Mm. That's mad. I just thought that was mad. When you compare it to the first day, you know, people say it takes on a life of his own in the second game. But one thing that I thought we were assured of was that midfield battle, and that just never really materialised.
Yeah, Mike mentioned O'Brien's miss there. And I mean, that was the moment, you know? Yeah. And it's basically from the exact position that you scored your goal against Kerry in 2002.
I just like to talk about that.
Right? Yeah, of course.
But let's talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, I am sorry, right? Like, Cluxton might have spent 5 hours in front of a laptop, but he could have easily have gone and, you know, to the pub for those 5 hours if Stephen O'Brien was going to aim a ball directly at his head, which is what he did. You know, like, in that situation, it actually is unforgivable for Stephen O'Brien to do what he did. I mean, if he rolls it along the ground and Cluxton saves it with his legs, okay. But, like, to aim it that high, to kick the ball that high and not square it and not try and roll along the ground yourself, it is kind of unforgivable.
I think he was caught in two minds, and that second cost him big time, because I thought he just should have put it across to Geaney, because even though Cooper had played it quite well, Geaney still had a little bit of room. He should have put it across to Geaney, and if he wasn't, then he had to shoot early and he had to go low. But I thought the play was to get across to Geaney. But once he got caught in two minds, once he had that second, that it was gone for him.
Yeah, because Cluxton did come out very quickly on him, you know, and he was like 2 yards away from probably when he shot. But you just feel like that's the sort of thing you see at club level, you know, like a guy just like snatches just at it. Yeah, he just
even
it.
When he realised, I thought he would have even pulled it back maybe and tried again or fisted over the bar or something, you know. I thought they would have got something out of it.
Well, he wasn't the only player to miss a goal chance. Late on, there was an opportunity for Dermot to cap everything off and, you know, finish. Square that particular circle, if you will, O'Sheen. I'm presuming that's the substitute that you're referring to, that smacked of desperation for you.
I thought so. I didn't see where it came out of. And like the opportunity, he played one really good ball into Kilkenny.
Yeah, after dispossessing a Kerry player, it was a lovely piece of play.
After that, we didn't get much from him. And the one right at the end,
assist for Scully's point.
The one at the end, he just. Like
he was a slave to the narrative there, to be fair.
Yeah, I thought, Jesus, he's going to stick in the corner of that, and then like we're going to be like, what script writer could write it any better than him sticking that in the roof of the net? but he should have passed the ball. You know, if because that's what I'm talking about with the standards that they set and everybody's playing as a team, and it just did, that particular part didn't look like the substitution, and that last play didn't ring true of this particular Dublin outfit for me.
But it's the same as been happening this year. The substitutes didn't add a huge amount again, really, did they? And you know, you're bringing guys off almost a lap of honour at the end. I'm sure he felt that those players could do a job. And to be honest, it was nice to see the likes like, you know, McCauley on the pitch, McMenamin on the pitch, and these guys. But they didn't get a massive amount. Cormac Costello was fine. You know, it's the narrative always was over the last few years, oh, they'll kill you with their bench. That hasn't happened as much this year, and they've still won the All-Ireland.
They have, yeah. And the Costello one was a bit of a strange one too, because the obvious one was Dean Rock, because he'd only had one touch of the ball from play. But he Costello comes on, and that leaves Dean Rock and Costello on, and Dean Rock kicks a point off his right shoulder almost straight away, and then he obviously kicks the 45, but he had been particularly quiet, and I thought he was the obvious substitution, but look, it's an embarrassment of riches. He didn't even use Paddy Small. He didn't even use Bernard Brogan. So, I mean...
One more word about Conor Callaghan as well, though. I mean, he's so physically strong now that instead of avoiding contact, what he gets the ball, finds the first opposition defender he can run into, so that you bounce off him, he's knocked off balance, and then he has a clear run. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. But he actually says, tackle me, please, so that I can get rid of you. Yeah. And then he has a free run on goal.
But I think the greatest thing, and I don't know if this has come from Sherlock or this has come from Darcy or whoever, but the biggest thing that Conor Callaghan now has in his armoury is that people expect him to go for the jugular all the time, and that is brilliant, because they're afraid of him, they're sitting off him a little bit, and that was his opportunity the other day to kick the points that he kicked, and he learned a huge amount from the first day to the second day, and as a forward and a young lad, that's really all you can expect from him.
We've had loads of conversations over the last couple of years about how to stop the Dubs, Mike, and you can now put those conversations into action next season as the new Leash manager. We look forward to that.
Yeah, we're coming for you. Quirk.
Yeah.
Fair play, though. Congrats on the job. You must be very excited.
No, obviously there's nothing official as of yet. I think until they go and bring it to the county board and get it all ratified there. But providing that all goes well, yeah, it should be... That's just a different challenge, lads. Yeah, I mean, it's something that that came my way, and I just thought it was a good opportunity. They're obviously, you know, up in Division 2 after John Shook was doing a great job in the last couple of years. They've some, you know, very decent under-20 sides, got to the Leinster final last year, and they have a lot of those guys underage again this year. So it just looks like a good project, and something that was too good to kind of turn down, really, I suppose.
Your club team has put out some big scores, so can we expect that to be the blueprint? Like, will it be an open, attacking, expressive style of football?
Yeah, I don't know. We'll just have to see. I mean, we have, speaking of the club side, we're starting our county championship on this Sunday coming, and we're actually playing the likes of Shawnee Shea and Stephen O'Brien and Ken Mayer, and those guys are our first round opponents. But it'll be once that's kind of done and dusted, we'll start to really focus on the Leash job. But it's just, look, I mean, I've watched all their games from the last kind of 2 years now, and I think there's a lot there. I think they're a group that have plenty of potential and are going in the right direction, obviously under what Shukru has done, and it's just going to be trying to improve them a little bit and find your best way. You won't know until you actually get guys on the pitch how is the best way to go and approach things. But, you know, I'm just looking forward to it. It's going to be just a very new challenge in a different kind of an environment.
If you want a good forwards coach, Oisin McConville has Jermaine Marsden's number.
Ah, nice.
Yeah, apparently Marsden's really, really good.
It's open season on inter-county managers next year.
Yeah. I'll be listening, boys.
All right, final word, Oisin. Murph is trying to tell me that people don't hate the Dubs. I don't know, maybe I'm spending too much time on Twitter, but for to those people who do, to the small minority of people around the country who have still not taken to this team or just feel that the financial advantages and all that outweigh any sort of love they should have for the way they play football, what do you say to those haters?
Well, unless you've got a bunker that you can hide in for the next 5 years, I suggest that you embrace it, enjoy it for what it is, enjoy the quality of the football. These guys, for those people who do maybe dislike them or hate them, then you haven't met them. because I want to hate them, but you can't because they're just solid gays. And as I say, if you have a bunker that you can hide in and get some plays in for the next 5 years, if not, then embrace it, enjoy it for what it is, because this is a special, special bunch of players.
Oisín, we have embraced and enjoyed the analysis all season and Mike Quirk, so thanks very much, Oisín.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks very much, Mike.
No better on.
And we'll wrap up the conversation.
Off to bed I went.
My head was fried.
I didn't even know there was a damn card in the thing.
Fucking
I was
horror.
Devastated.
I'd been off the smokes a while.
Hard full.
Saw that. Back on them. I had a date organised for that night. A first date with someone. Cancelled that.
My head was gone.
Woke up the following morning and to my absolute amazement, I read this message on my phone.
Let me tell you, you're only getting this because you're a former player of mine, and I'm not too sure too many journalists would have got the third time lucky.
Hi Richie, sorry the equipment didn't work again, but it's no problem for me to do it again. Maybe see you in Ipswich one day for third time lucky. Best wishes, Mick. Best wishes, Mick.
I got a job on a Wednesday. I'd been a player up until that Wednesday. Took the training on Thursday. I picked the team on Friday and I took the game on Saturday. So I got the job on a Wednesday. I'd been a player up until that Wednesday. Took the training on Thursday. Picked the team on Friday and I took the game on Saturday. So it was a bit of a whirlwind.
Oh, God. Oh, Jesus Christ.
When I'm just looking down, I think all the red lights are still on. It looks like we've recorded this successfully. Mick, thank you so much for agreeing to do this so many times.
Richie, I sincerely hope so, because there's no fourth time lucky, let me tell you.
All right, so we're saying Stephen Cluckson did show a bit more emotion than usual after this All-Ireland, but we should counter that by mentioning the dressing room video that came out. Don't know if you saw this scene, guys. There's Cormac Costello doing the now obligatory post-match dressing room thing of one lad rapping along to a tune, much to the amusement of his teammates. All except the skipper, Ken Clucko, who is politely edging Costello out of the way so that he can sweep up around him. Yep, he is taking the All Blacks rugby mantra very literally and actually cleaning the sheds.
He's cleaning the sheds.
Well, good people make good dubs, you know?
Yeah.
As they say.
Oh, and stop. I'm telling you, the Perry, like, you're just pressing all the wrong buttons.
Well, what's
here.
The, I didn't even notice any problem with what you just said.
Cleaning out the sheds. Good people make good dubs.
What's wrong with that?
Well, they have their corporate link up as well, don't they?
AIG, Same sponsors. Very, they're hand in glove, all right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm surprised you haven't talked about the shameful scenes on the hill when those Kerry Ultras dropped a scooter into the mass of Dublin fans.
Was it not a pig's head, no?
I don't know. There was something, Massey Ferguson. There was definitely some kind of a provocation there. And I thought, you know, I thought it's, isn't it interesting that you haven't brought that up?
Well, I don't have any facts. All I saw is some extremely annoying 15 seconds of footage of lads having a swing at each other.
I was down near the hill, yeah, and it is a bit shocking when something happens to you. You're like, oh, she's trouble down there. Yeah, but all you're seeing...
This has not happened at GAA games up and down the country. I mean, well, often the officials are being targeted rather than supporters.
Yeah, not funny, not at Croke Park. Yeah. Like, do you know what I mean? Not at, on big intercounty occasions at Croke Park, I don't think. Anyway, maybe people from other counties have been on the hill can tweet us in with some stories of things they've been involved in. I don't know. But see, who knows who started or how it started. All I saw were the Kerry lads getting ushered down. I presume this is what came out in the video, is it?
Yeah.
Kerry lads being ushered down the stairs by security, down the steps, and it's hard to see in the crowd from where I was in the crowd exactly what was going on. Seeing a lot of arm movement. A lot of jostling, that kind of stuff. But it's been mentioned now, Ken. I don't know what more there is to say without doing a full, thorough investigation of the incident that has shocked me and apparently shocked you as well.
Mm.
But we'll move on because it's been an incredible weekend for Dublin football all round. It was capped off yesterday when the women's team completed 3 in a row in front of more than 56,000 fans in fairly hard conditions at Croke Park. Noelle Healy, congratulations on just an incredible achievement.
Cheers, thanks very much. Yeah, delighted. Finally on the right end of a 3 in a row, I suppose.
Well, yeah, I mean, your career goes back to 2010, to the first All-Ireland, and then you had those lean years. Sounds a little bit unfair because obviously you guys went so close a few years in a row. But you hear this cliche about, oh, the monkey is off the back when you win something, but it clearly seems to have been the case for you guys. You were obviously... something happened there. There was obviously such a release after the first one that you've just gone from strength to strength.
Yeah, I think there was probably a nice phrase that Mick had said in the documentary. We could kind of see us almost get that monkey off our back. There was almost a moment in that final where you could see us finally just believe. And I think that probably was a huge moment for us. I think we always kind of felt like we were so close, and that's really what brought us back year after year. But no, it's been brilliant, and it's just been so nice to kind of cement it and just kind of show that I suppose we had that belief and that talent as well. So yeah, it's been brilliant.
Mick described the game afterwards as an absolute war, and that's what it looked like. Was that how it felt like to be in the middle of it?
It did, yeah. I suppose the conditions probably took away from the talent that was there. You know, I think Galway are such a free-flowing team. They've great ball carriers, and it kind of wasn't the day for that kind of football, which is an unfortunate for you know, the attendance that was there. But yeah, it was a hard game to get into, to kind of get a grasp of, and to kind of get any momentum or any kind of passes together. But you know, I think the backs were brilliant. They probably saved our skin a few times from a forward point of view.
What's it like to come into a game like that as a sub? What was it like during the week for you, actually? Because you were named publicly, you were named in the team, but you didn't actually start the game.
Yeah, I suppose I've been struggling with injury just the past month coming into the Cork game. And then that kind of probably set me back a little bit, just the timing of it. But I think chatting to Mick, we kind of knew I only had 30 or 40 minutes in me. So we had a conversation last week, and he kind of felt that it'd be better for me to finish the game than to start it, just, you know, given the team that Galway are. So yeah, I knew kind of all week that I was only going to be able to come in, and I was just happy, I suppose, to be able to play any kind of a role. I'd said, you know, last year, I remember I probably didn't think that I was going to be able to contribute, having to move down the country at work. So you know, to be able to play any role was just brilliant. But yeah, it's hard. You know, you get text messages from people saying they're delighted to see you back in the team, and you're just like, yeah, it's brilliant. But to be able to be on the pitch at the end was such a lovely moment.
Yeah, yeah, no, and to score a point as well, I guess one of the insurance points near the end as well. You know, it's all well and good being part of it, but it's nice to kick one over the bar as well, Noah.
I know, and Nicole Owens was slagging me afterwards because I hadn't scored in the last two All-Ireland finals. She was like, probably the most over-celebrated point that I've ever scored. But I know, I was delighted to finally get on the score sheet.
Yeah, well, everyone has their own stories in a final like that. And as you're saying, you've had your injuries. I think it's Cork. You've been working in Cork. So like, it's a strange year. It must be hard to feel like you're giving everything that you would have given in previous years. I don't know how you even find the time to do that.
Yeah, it has. It was a challenging year. Without a doubt, you kind of end up having to do a lot of the hard craft and the fitness stuff by yourself, which you know, it's hard enough as it is, and when you don't get that kind of buzz of doing it with everyone else, it's tough. But we all kind of said it's been a funny year this year for our panel. Everybody seems to have kind of their own struggles, their own setbacks. You know, there's obviously been Siobhan Killeen and Nicole having their injuries, and you know, people just had different family stuff going on and just different things. And it was great that we were all able to just pull together and pull with each other and kind of, you know, put in the performances and kind of end up with the win that we did.
Yeah, I mean, that traveling long distances to get to training, or training by yourself for a large part of the year, I mean, it's something that other counties have to deal with all the time. But with Dublin, you know, there is just a presumption there that if you're playing for Dublin, you're living in Dublin, and it's just a lot easier. So, I mean, I'd say you, after the year and a bit that you've had, you have maybe a better understanding of what it's like to be from other counties, and just that level of commuting, that level of sort of loneliness when you're working by yourself but as part of a team.
Yeah, and we've always kind of said that we've been very lucky in that, like, even younger girls, you know, they've their choice of colleges in Dublin. There's not even a question that you'd go anywhere else. You just, there's the opportunity there, the course is there, so you stay in Dublin. And you know, we've always acknowledged that we've been very lucky from that point of view. And yeah, you know, we've seen the Mayo girls did one or two training sessions, I think, at DCU as well. And it's very tough. And I have a lot of respect now for the girls that do it. But yeah.
I was interested in to talk to hear Mick Bohan talk afterwards. I think immediately afterwards, actually, about the like such a bizarre weekend to have the replay, the men's replay, and your game falling on the same weekend, and just the fact that there was so much hoopla around the drive for five and all that kind of stuff, and the fact it was impossible for you guys to be completely insulated from that as well. I mean, how did you do that? Did you all watch that game together, for example, or how did that all work?
No, not at all. I think I think Niamh McAvoy said during the week she's very much into her routine. We were all the same. You know, we were almost given out that it was a 6 o'clock. It was going to eat into our dinner time. We all just went about our own way. I watched it at home with my boyfriend and my family. Like, I'd gone into the original match, but there wasn't a question of it. No. But it was nice in some ways. It was a bit of a distraction, I suppose, the evening time. It was just nice. There was a nice build up to it during the week. It probably took away from, like, not took away, but it probably was a little bit of a distraction for us. We kind of got to fly under the radar a little bit over the weekend and during the week, which was nice for us because it meant, you know, there wasn't as much attention on us and probably as much pressure on us going into the weekend. And now, you know, it's been a great weekend for the city. I think there was a great crowd going in there. And it's just great that there's a group of kids that can look up to both the men and the women for the weekend. I can kind of float on that for the week as well.
Absolutely. I mean, it might have taken away from the pressure and maybe a little bit of coverage that you would have otherwise had, but certainly didn't affect the crowd. You know, more than 56,000, which is impressive for any sporting event anywhere, really.
Yeah, no, it was huge. We came out and we looked straight ahead of us and we could see the canal was open as last year, and then we kind of turned around and we saw that the Hogan upper was open as well. Yeah, I remember we were doing our warm up and it was just, it's unbelievable. Like, it, you kind of nearly take it for granted at this stage that the crowd is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. But we were looking at, I think it was Elaine Buckley put up a stat that from like 2014, I think we had just broken the 30,000 mark and now we're pushing towards 60,000. It's phenomenal to think like that's where the crowd is at. That's where the standard is at.
When does that become less and less of a priority for you guys, though? Because obviously the crowd size is great and all, and it is sort of a talking point after these games. But as a player, like as an elite athlete, I mean, at some stage that just kind of has to fade into the background, I suppose.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you kind of ask about afterwards. You know, what's the crowd? What was the crowd, but it's not really a priority at all for us going in. It's a nice thing to know that your sport's gathering that much attention and gathering that much interest, but it's definitely not something that we'd be thinking about going into the match or anything.
What's the plan for today, Noel?
The hospital's obviously the children's visits this morning, and then I suppose we'll celebrate the British Open and go into Huey, into the Boar's Head.
All right.
So we'll see where we go from there.
It's the new coppers these days, the Boar's Head. I don't know when this exactly happened.
Sure. I know, it seems to be a tradition now, but he's a Bridget man, so we'll pay him a visit.
All right, sounds good. Listen, enjoy it, Noel. Well deserved. Thanks so much for talking to us.
Not at all. Thank you very much.
Owen McDevitt.
All up in the interweb.
Owen McDevitt.
Worldwide.
The Murph and Mackey for Most Welcome Irishman of the Year goes to Owen McDevitt.
Owen McDevitt.
From Ireland's Second Captain Show.
All up in the interweb.
Owen McDevitt.
Worldwide.
Second Captains. Those guys are like family to me, man.
Owen McDevitt.
This is like the coolest song I ever heard in my whole life.
Owen McDevitt.
Fuck all of you said I wouldn't make
Stop
it.
Stop talking about Tom Finney.
He said I was a loser.
This guy is a bit of a turkey.
All right.
He said I was a... soccer. But look at me now, all up in the interweb.
Owen McDevitt.
Worldwide.
The new world veteran of the championship.
Owen McDevitt.
Owen McDevitt.
If you say, for example, the Barcelona team you worked at, is it fair to say anybody could have managed those guys?
No, of course not.
Okay, now that's probably enough Dublin All-Ireland talk for... anyone to handle on a Monday, am I right? Happy enough?
Well, it's two separate All-Irelands. I mean, they're two... Yeah, you know, it's two different codes on.
Nobody hates the women's team yet, but give it another year or two.
We'll give that a good rattle too,
yeah,
I'm sure.
I'm sure. Yep. A reminder, sign up now if you want to attend either of our upcoming live events, both of which will be absolutely amazing. We'll give you detail on that if you're already signed up to the World Service over the next few days. Thanks, Murph.
Thank you, Owen.
Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Owen. Thank you.
Congratulations, of course, on your All-Ireland victory, Ken.
Thank you very much. Success after success after success after success after success after success.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off. They never go home. They never go home. They never go home, those boys.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.